As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens by TheAthletic.com. I am Marc-Antoine Gonin alongside Arpin Basu on this Tuesday, July 19th. Arpin, we said that we would take this week off, but being who we are, not only are we recording a podcast, but we're putting it out a day in advance.
So, well, you know, I mean, news dictates what we do in the summertime, and so there's a lot of news going on around the Canadiens right now, a lot, which is why we asked. So we're going to get into the Jeff Petrie trade today, a little later on in the show. But what we're going to start with is the spicier of the two storylines around the Canadiens. It's all the rather remarkable goings on with the Canadiens and the Winnipeg Jets concerning Pierre-Luc Dubois. So in order to do that, we have invited our friend Murat Ateş, who covers the Jets also well for The Athletic in Winnipeg, to discuss this situation. Murat, welcome to The Athletic Support.
Thank you for having me. What a wild time to know you guys and to be discussing hockey news between Winnipeg and Montreal.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And regarding Dubois, I mean, you heard rumblings. I mean, you came to see us at the draft, because you had heard something was brewing between the two teams back then. If I throw you a very general question to start things off, how do you feel about that? And how is it perceived in Winnipeg, the fact that, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois, you know, a few years only after pouting on the ice when he was with the Columbus Blue Jackets, hoping for a trade, eventually moved to Winnipeg, seems to one out. He made it clear as though he did not want to sign like a long-term extension with the Jets. How is it perceived that now there are all those rumblings linking him to Montreal and the fact that he seems to be maneuvering to not only to get out of town, but eventually to go where he wants to go?
Yeah, Marc-Antoine, there are so many layers, and to understand the Winnipeg perspective is to kind of know the overall story. Pierre-Luc Dubois is not the only person who has asked out of Winnipeg at some point in the last several years. So if you're a Winnipeg Jets fan, or if you've followed the Jets in Winnipeg, you watched as Evander Kane asked for trades until he was traded in 2015. You saw Jacob Trouba hold out the following season, eventually saying, okay, I'll play through my contract. And He eventually got traded a year before unrestricted free agency to the New York Rangers. Following that, you had Dustin Byfuglien just depart. No trade, just I'm done with all of this. And then you follow that up with Patrick Laine, the second overall pick in 2016, you know, becoming unhappy. And, you know, I think, you know, clashing with leadership group a little bit would be fair to say, and then asking for a trade as well. Not only that, but when Laine gets traded to Columbus for Pierre-Luc Dubois, he goes with Jack Roslovic, who had also asked to be out of Winnipeg. And I think that when Pierre-Luc Dubois was acquired, the idea was, oh my goodness, Kevin Cheveldayoff, he pulled a rabbit out of a hat. I mean, the Laine situation was tough. Jack Roslovic, well, in Winnipeg, we didn't know what he was going to be quite yet. But to go from those disgruntled players to a center of the future, young, had so much success in Columbus already at that point. I mean, it was supposed to be, okay, now they have him and they have Mark Scheifele and there's two top centers. And instead of having to rebuild or anything crazy like that, there's a reason to believe that Winnipeg is going to win again in the not too distant future. So to go from there to here is, I think, greatly disappointing to Jets fans. And there's been a lot of emotions on our pieces, you know, on the message boards, on Twitter, all over the place, because he was supposed to be the answer and the solution. And the idea that he wants out is all the more dismaying when you consider the full plot of the Winnipeg Jets.
And not only that, but look, when he arrived, he really gave the impression that he was happy to be there. His dad coaches there, you know, not with the Jets, obviously, but with, you know, he was familiar with the city. He said all the right things when he arrived. He seemed genuinely excited to be in Winnipeg. And you don't see that very often. I mean, you know, like, not, hey, no knock on Winnipeg. No, I love Winnipeg.
Yeah.
I love Winnipeg. I love it. I honestly do. I've never had a bad night in Winnipeg. But, you know, the reality is that Winnipeg does not have a great reputation among NHL players. You look at all the player polls, all, you know, they always comes out near the bottom, what have you. And he was a breath of fresh air, I thought, when he arrived, because he seems sincere in wanting to be there. And now to have this about face so soon after the fact, has got to make it doubly disappointing, because I remember back when that trade happened and thinking, wow, this must be so refreshing for Jets fans to have a young star player who seems to embrace being in Winnipeg. And now it's just the complete opposite of that.
Yeah. And having his dad, Eric, coaching within the Manitoba Moose, you know, that led to some good storylines early. He was talking about his mom's home cooking. And then there was this kind of fun Zoom debate. Was mom's home cooking better? Was dad's? Eric Dubois did some media availability. We don't often get him. So all of a sudden it was, oh, happy family situation, everything. There's been this happy reunion. And if I could, you know, sort of guess or make some inferences on Winnipeg's point of view at that time, it was probably that they knew that Dubois was, you know, not too happy in Columbus, obviously. It was probably that they were already aware that his long-term dream would be to play in Montreal. But at that time, 2 years ago, you know, looking forward into the future, believing they could win with him and Scheifele, and believing that, you know, once he gets to know the city, he has his family here, all of that sort of thing, I imagine that they thought that they wouldn't have to deal with the scenario here in July of 2022. They would hope that he would have fit in so well and everything would have gone so well. And that 60-point season he just had would show him that, hey, this is a long-term place for you too. And I think that was a calculated risk on Winnipeg's part, thinking that it could provide those conditions and that everything would go well. And things have largely gone well. His first portion of a season wasn't great when he was first acquired, but this last season he just had long stretches. He was Winnipeg's best center, and that's an impressive feat on a team with Mark Scheifele on it. So I think that there's this sense of, oh my goodness, we hoped to dodge this. And now there's a little bit of maybe stubbornness, which plays right into Kevin Cheveldayoff's hands, because he's shown such patience over the years with all of those other players that I just mentioned, which leads us to this sort of stalemate of will they, won't they? Is there a trade? Is there not a trade? Will there be an offer sheet? What would Winnipeg do? Because as you guys know, and as we've written together, I mean, there is some interest between both teams, especially Montreal, I think, on a trade for Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Yeah, so in regards to that, I mean, it seems to me like, okay, so we heard the rumors, right? We heard Dubois' agent, Pat Brisson, telling TVA Sports that, you know, he's a bit more comfortable at more of the liberty to discuss his situations since he doesn't have a contract. And he said, well, Montreal would be one of the teams where he'd be happy to go. I think that the overall sentiment of Dubois towards the Montreal Canadiens have been known forever. That being said, to me, it seems as though there is a margin. There's a difference between wanting out of Winnipeg and exclusively or almost exclusively wanting to go to Montreal. And I'm not sure if that leap people have been mistaken in doing it, in the sense that, yes, the Canadians are most likely showing interest and there's a mutual interest in there. But at the same time, isn't it just Pierre-Luc looking for an out, whether it be Montreal or somewhere else?
Well, that's the interesting one. And that's what, I mean, there are so many levels of posturing and strategy and gamesmanship here, because at the heart of what you're saying is the idea that Winnipeg doesn't owe Dubois a trade to Montreal just because that's the team that he's grown up hoping to play for. And Montreal probably knows, well, hey, 2 years from now, when he's eligible for unrestricted free agency, we're probably number one on his list. So, you know, we are interested in, but maybe this is influencing the quality of the trade offer, for example, coming from Montreal. And if that's not high enough to satiate Kevin Cheveldayoff off in Winnipeg, he doesn't owe Dubois that trade. He can look at all 30 other teams. And if it is so important to Dubois to simply not play in Winnipeg, well, hey, there's plenty of other cities out there. And it's really incumbent upon the Winnipeg Jets just to get the best return possible. This is where I start, you know, obviously there's interpretation here, but looking at, you know, why would Pat Brisson be so active on that front? Why the social pressure here on making that connection? And then, of course, you have, you know, following up from that, the next day you guys were talking to Kent Hughes, and there's a suggestion, oh, a big center would be loved here, you know, whatever his name might be, or you guys know the story there. It's this idea to me that as long as Montreal's offer is inadequate, then Winnipeg has the option to go shop to all 30 other teams and see what they can do if they're interested in trading Dubois at all. Because it's possible they are like, okay, we have your rights, you know, hold out if you don't want to play hockey, because you're a restricted free agent. You're not unrestricted until 2024 at the earliest. So there might be that. But if they do want to trade him, there's so many other teams available. And I wonder if some of this posturing and some of this noise is just to try to remind all of those other teams, well, that in 2 years from now, Dubois is a Montreal Canadian anyway. So maybe you don't want to outbid us right now. And I think that
that's 100%. Listen, I'm guessing too, but at the same time, I'm not, because there is no reason for Pat Brisson, who did not just fall off the apple cart or whatever expression you want to use. He is, I don't even know if that's an expression, but regardless, you know, Pat Brisson, this is not his first rodeo. Like, and it is a pretty remarkable thing for any agent, let alone a veteran, high powered super agent like Pat Brisson, to go on live television and talk about a client whose rights still belong to an NHL team, regardless of the fact that he signed or not. His rights belong to the Winnipeg Jets. For him to go out and say that my client would like to play in Montreal. Montreal is a city where he would like to play, is the exact thing that he said. Montréal est une ville où il aimerait jouer. That is a remarkable thing. And then you have to go, okay, what possible motivation could Pat Brisson have to do that? A, it's pretty clear in watching the video that this was not some sort of ambush situation where Louis Jean was throwing a question at him out of left field. He knew exactly that the question was coming. He was prepared to answer it. That was the answer he was prepared to give. What that accomplishes, in my mind, is what you just said. I mean, that's not an accident. What happened is by saying that, he has now depressed the entire market on Pierre-Luc Dubois on a possibility of a trade from those 30 other teams, because none of those teams can have any assurance that they will have Pierre-Luc Dubois for more than two seasons. And that impacts the quality of offers that they're willing to give. It's sort of like, you know, when people compare off-season trades to trade deadline trades, it's mainly ridiculous, because trade deadline trades are generally made for rentals, people that you're going to have till the end of the season and presumably in a long playoff run, and the price is commensurate to that, which is why you see players traded for a draft pick or a prospect or something that is not equal to the quality of the player you're acquiring, because it has to do with the amount of time that you're getting that player. Now, with Pierre-Luc Dubois, if you're not the Montreal Canadiens, because of what Pat Brisson said publicly, but you would imagine that Pat Brisson is saying this to anyone who would listen, that you're basically bidding on a player that you cannot reasonably expect to have for more than two seasons, which will impact how much you're willing to offer, which in turn makes whatever the Canadiens are willing to offer that much more attractive, because the Canadiens are the only team that can put together an offer that reflects the fact that Dubois is more than a two-year option, but they're also reflecting the fact that the Winnipeg Jets are in a terrible position here and don't really have loads of leverage if they're sort of being forced to deal with one team in particular, as opposed to what I'm sure they would rather do, set up an auction around the league and come up with the best return they can find. Pat Brisson has essentially thrown a wrench in that whole scenario.
Mm-hmm. I think there's an idea that you're talking about by referencing the trade deadline of these pinch points in the NHL calendar as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that the draft was one of them. I mean, Pierre-Luc Dubois was at the draft, presumably in anticipation of a trade. I've had that told to me by people who would know about the situation in hopes, perhaps, if not in certainty, that a trade would be consummated on the draft floor. As you guys both know, we were hearing the possibility of we were hearing about trade discussions that day. And so that would have been a pinch point. With that passed, I think that Brisson and company are in an attempt to create a public pressure to maintain that pinch right here and now, because the next real one in my mind isn't until training camp, when you guys are asking Montreal every single day, well, what's the latest on this? And we're asking Winnipeg every single day. Like, I mean, Pierre-Luc Dubois is being asked for every single day. Well, what the heck just happened all summer? That's another pinch point as well. And if that can be, you know, if Pierre-Luc Dubois is under contract at that point, he's not holding out, which would be its own story. The next pinch point wouldn't be until that trade deadline, where if you're a Winnipeg Jets fan and listening to this, you probably look at the Andrew Kopp trade where, okay, they got a first round pick, they got a second round pick, they got Morgan Barron, so Justin's brother, you know, for one playoff run of Andrew Kopp. The idea to me of Pierre-Luc Dubois for two playoff runs at a reasonably affordable contract that Winnipeg could theoretically sign now does make him an appealing asset to 30 teams. I mean, as a trade deadline rental twice, the only thing, though, is that if he's going to pull, quote unquote, the shift as he did in Columbus, because he's so fixated on Montreal as Pat Brisson is trying to make it look, then maybe that's one more reason to try to make it look like he'll just pout and things won't work out if things don't work out his way. Because there's so many different calendar points, whether it's right now, whether it's camp or the trade deadline. And I think that his agent is just trying to skip that whole process in an attempt to make that pressure happen now.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, if I'm Winnipeg, you know, thinking of the list of players that you mentioned early on, Murat, there's a history there of players wanting to leave. It's become an endemic problem for them, and they have to figure out a way to make it stop. And I wonder if they're going to draw a line with Dubois, saying, okay, well, this is we're going to take a hard line here, and we're going to take our stance and be true to it. be and keep it, and whether it means that we leave him go, we let him go only, you know, a few weeks or months before he becomes a UFA, and until then we just give him 1 year deals, and that's how it's going to be. We're just going to stick to our guns, find the best offer when we want, but we're not going to let a player dictate the agenda for us. Because in the past, they had to comply to those players' requests, and they must think at some point we've got to figure out a process to send a message that will tell our players and will tell the rest of the league, well, we have our players, we've got their rights, and we're going to make sure that we get the full benefit for that, and we're not going to let be run by by the intentions of XYZ, and we're going to be the ones dictating the agenda.
I agree with that, Marc-Antoine. I think that that's an important consideration from Kevin Cheveldayoff's perspective. And if you look at the details of Winnipeg history, Evander Kane, who just re-signed with Edmonton, did he not? He had his press conference and he said, well, I asked for a trade from Winnipeg every single year before that happened. So mm-hmm. Kevin Cheveldayoff demonstrated his patience there. Trouba was not under contract and not at camp in 2016. That trade didn't happen until 2019. Patrick Laine, trade rumblings had begun about a year. Don't quote me on that, but in substantial amount of time, whether it was a year or more in advance of that trade actually happening. And I think the reason why Winnipeg has been able to tread water in all of these cases, getting solid returns, is because of this extreme commitment to stubbornness. And like I said earlier, Dubois was a rabbit out of a hat for Winnipeg. It was a really impressive deal. And I think that only happens when you're willing to commit to extreme patience. But that all seems ratcheted up by, you know, tenfold this time because Pat Brisson is being so public about it. And if I can interpret or guess or make some predictions about Winnipeg on this front, that's going to make Kevin Cheveldayoff all the more stubborn and all the more patient in an attempt to say, okay, big name agent, big market, young star player, you don't dictate what we do here. And he can point to those three situations as times where, well, hey, it worked out for me pretty well.
Yeah. He's basically going to say, you're not going to bully me into doing something. But here's where I find this a very fascinating thing for Kevin Cheveldayoff. Because all that notwithstanding, because I agree with you, if I'm a GM, and I have this big shot agent from LA, and I have the Montreal Canadiens and all that they represent trying to bully me into, you know, getting 50 cents on the dollar for one of my best players, I'm saying no, a flat out no. But here's the thing, is that you look at the Mark Scheifele situation, everything he said after the season, he has 2 years left on his deal. Blake Wheeler, there's talk of maybe him being dealt, 2 years left on his deal, 35 years old. There's an argument to be made. If you forget all this stuff, all the Dubois stuff, and you just take a cold, hard look at the Winnipeg Jets, there's an argument to be made that they're at a very important inflection point. Like they have to figure something out. Do they have a group that they can add to and make a decent run as currently constituted, or do they need to bring in a bunch of futures? Because it's not as if the Winnipeg Jets are swimming in draft picks. They have 2 picks in the first 4 rounds next year. Are they in a situation where they have to sort of do a retool and build around, you know, Ehlers and Connor and to a lesser extent Lowry and Morrissey and Schmidt and the guys that are under contract? But can you turn Pierre-Luc Dubois, Mark Scheifele, and Blake Wheeler into a decent, and you could even maybe throw Connor Hellebuyck into that conversation, but you know, you already have some promising young players. Are they at a point where they need to make that decision? Because I think that the Dubois situation is forcing them into making that decision. They're forcing them maybe sooner than they wanted to come up with a realization or have a cold objective look at their club and say, are we good enough where we can add to this group and win? Or are we at a point where we have to start over to some extent, not completely tear it down, but have a bit of a retool here and build around some of our younger players?
Well, I mean, it's a great question. And I think that what's happening is that Dubois is forcing a different decision in a similar direction that was already going to need to be made. Because some of those guys that you just mentioned, I mean, Blake Wheeler at 35 years old is a middle six player who is still getting first line ice time. And I believe that the club and player are willing to move on from each other at this point, which already would mean a seismic change in culture and who gets those big minutes and number one power play time and all of those sorts of things within the Winnipeg Jets. At that exit interview, though, where I asked Blake Wheeler a question about essentially accountability on behalf of Winnipeg Jets, how the forwards were not necessarily playing tremendous defense during the year, Paul Stastny interrupted Blake Wheeler's answer like a hockey version of Kanye West saying, hold on. And he's talking then about a lack of respect between players on the team and this idea that it's offense first. And that's a sincerely important shots fired calmly and articulately sort of moment from Paul Stastny at that point. So you're already looking at a team that needs change. And I mean, the interpretation at that point is that it was Mark Scheifele he was referring to primarily, though there could be others as well, because Scheifele had such a poor defensive season, and you could see it in terms of effort and on-ice results as well. But at that point, you would think, okay, well, if Winnipeg needs to move one of their centers, and Scheifele's an unrestricted free agent 2 years from now, and he's been, you know, underpaid at $6.125 million and scoring a point per game for several seasons on end, well, that next contract's going to be tough. So maybe this is the time to move on from Scheifele and Wheeler both. Pierre-Luc Dubois could be part of the solution, the answer. He and Kyle Connor were two-thirds of an amazing line all throughout the year. You could put Nikolai Ehlers on another line, and you have enough to sort of hum with there a little bit. You're not necessarily a contender, but you can flirt with the playoffs based on who was really, truly driving the bus last year for the Winnipeg Jets. But if you flip that all on its head and Dubois is the one that has to go, and Wheeler is probably on the way out, and now Mark Scheifele's left, but also has that 2 years until unrestricted free agency, just like Connor Hellebuyck, you know, you are flirting with this idea of, if not a flat out rebuild, which in my mind would take trading Hellebuyck because he's too good for a team to properly tank, it could at least see a complete dialing back and a real focus on Kyle Connor, Nikolai Ehlers, Cole Perfetti. I think Adam Lowry is even too old for this group, though he could be a good short term captain, perhaps. And that's not necessarily a playoff team out of the gate, depending on what you can get back for Dubois in this scenario and Wheeler. And so that maybe puts all of the more pressure if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff losing sleep at night right now, saying, well, I can't accept the most basic form of return for Dubois. I have to hold out for that young star they won't give me, or I have to hold out for an unprotected first, or whatever else it is that is on his must-have list. Because without Dubois, without Wheeler, and the possibility of Scheifele and Hellebuyck gone, it's not enough in Winnipeg. And I don't think that ownership or management has any interest in going all of the way into a rebuild right now.
If we look at this from the Canadiens' perspective, it's funny because when we talked about Jeff Gorton when he came in from the New York Rangers organization, say, yeah, well, he retooled, he rebuilt the Rangers rather quickly, but he got help with a number one pick, a number two pick. And also he had a UFA that really wanted to come to play for him or to play for the Rangers in Artemi Panarin. And he had a star-studded defenseman who only wanted to play New York in Adam Fox. And now it got me, this whole situation got me thinking, is this a little bit, I know they're not the same player, not the same caliber, not the same position, but is Pierre-Luc Dubois a little bit the potential Adam Fox for the Montreal Canadiens and a way for the team to accelerate the process of, you know, of getting better just by virtue of a player that insists on coming to play for the Montreal Canadiens? Could Dubois be Montreal's Adam Fox?
Maybe maybe it's not New York and not Montreal. Maybe it's Jeff Gorton that all these players want to play for. Maybe that's the common element here, is that I didn't hear about Pierre-Luc Dubois' desire to play in Montreal until Jeff Gorton was hired. Artemi Panarin, Adam Fox, Jacob Trouba, all these people all want to play for Jeff Gorton. It has nothing to do with the city.
The magic touch.
Yes.
Well,
you're reminding me of one of the
reasons. He wishes it was true.
Yes, no doubt. But one of the reasons people say, okay, an offer sheet is out of the question, and it does seem unlikely in the case of Pierre-Luc Dubois in Montreal, but one of the reasons that people go all of the way to this is impossible out of the question is there's no way a team that just drafted first overall is going to put its first round pick on the line in the form of an offer sheet. And to your point, Marc-Antoine, how good can Montreal be if Dubois does succeed in forcing his way there and the trade return is not near and dear? It's certainly not Nick Suzuki or something to that effect. Well, how good does that team get? You have two lines now that can hum. Are there other pieces or other moves that then get accelerated if you're Montreal? Because, oh my goodness, you know, you're probably looking at least a possibility of the playoffs if everything else is set and the goaltending's good and everything else to that effect. Well, is there anything
just
like that?
Well, you just hit it. Is that they can't know about their goaltending. The goaltending could, like what you said earlier about the Jets not being able to tank because of Connor Hellebuck, the Canadians can't really contend because of the Carey Price situation and just the whole uncertainty in goal. I mean, Carey Price might play one game and is, I mean, knock on wood, I hope this doesn't happen for his sake, but he could play one game and decide that's it. His career's over. Like it's, and that's, wow. and then you just can't plan around that. I mean, that's the thing. So the unprotected first round pick, which I would, if I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff, more than Nick Suzuki, I am asking for an unprotected first round pick, or even I would even let them go top five protected, you know, and like, and say, fine, you can have your top five, but anything after that, I want that. Cause I think the Canadians finishing with a Pierre-Luc Dubois, even finishing between or having between the fifth and 10th pick is a very realistic scenario because of the goaltending I mentioned, because their defense is so young now. They just traded Jeff Petrie away. Yes, they acquired Mike Matheson, but there are a lot of holes on defense. So this team, Pierre-Luc Dubois or not, is not ready to be all that competitive. Maybe I'll eat my words, but in my eyes, without Pierre-Luc Dubois, as the team stands right now, the Canadians, I think, would have a chance at a top five pick next year, which might be the best case scenario. But I agree that, you know, Nick Suzuki is probably off the table as far as Ken Hughes is concerned, but I would think to an even greater extent, an unprotected first round pick is off the table from Ken Hughes' perspective, I would think.
Which could probably then make, make that trade, like it would cause this trade to be postponed. You know, the Canadians could very well wait a year, use that draft pick and then see what's out there and what they can do in order to acquire Dubois in a year's
time. Or just wait 2 years and then just sign him.
Yeah, that's my question. Is, from Montreal's perspective, other than all of this noise, why now? Because Winnipeg, we've always assumed, you know, from the beginning that I was hearing rumblings of Pierre-Luc Dubois not signing long-term, well, there's a clear formula here, and it's he signs a one-year contract right now as a restricted free agent, and it takes him to next summer, still under a team's control. And okay, you can look at trading him then. His new team, presumably Montreal, can sign him to an extension. That's the time that all of this should happen. Now look at where we are, and you know, with Pat Brisson on live television, like you say, there's this sense that, oh my goodness, this has to happen now. But does it? Why? What would be the incentive here and today?
It doesn't. It doesn't. The only person with an incentive to get this done sooner rather than later, in my opinion, is Kevin Cheveldayoff, because this is going to linger and it's going to make what is seemingly a bit of a dysfunctional dressing room based on that whole Paul Stastny episode that you described earlier and other things. You know, I mean, it just seems like there's something off with that group. This is only going to make that worse, right? So if I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff and I don't want another distraction, you know, infiltrating my dressing room and making what's already a bit of a problematic situation worse, I'd be incentivized to prevent that by getting this potential distraction out. But from Montreal's perspective, there's zero rush. They don't plan on being competitive for the next 2 years anyway. And so if they decide to wait and just sign him as a UFA for nothing other than cap space, I think that would be the best thing they could do. Really, they get to use their draft picks next year, even the year after, perhaps, and then just clear the space necessary. They'll have a lot of contracts coming off the books between now and then. Though they should conceivably have the money to go out and sign someone like Pierre-Luc Dubois at his market rate. And personally, I think all things being equal, the Canadiens would probably prefer doing it that way, but this opportunity has presented itself and they're seemingly quite enticed by it.
Before we wrap up this conversation, I think that in the event that there was a trade would happen, let's say in the next few weeks or even in the next year or under, you know, the current state of both teams' rosters. I'm sure you've already taken a peek at the Montreal lineup. Apart from Nick Suzuki, are there players that you think could be of any use for the Jets, and that would make sense in a trade like that? I understand that this is all speculation and your own read on the situation, but you know, when we talk about guys like Kirby Dach, guys like Josh Anderson, whatnot, are there guys that you think could potentially interest the Jets in a trade like this?
Yeah, I mean, great question. I think that the moment you trade Dubois is the moment you need a center. And of course, Winnipeg's wish list would have Nick Suzuki on it. I don't expect that to be realistic. So then the availability of a player like Kirby Dach becomes tremendously intriguing. And I know that the offense hasn't quite landed for him yet at the NHL level for long stretches at 21 years old, but his two-way impact is already quite solid. And I think there's reason to like this player going forward as well. So I think that that is an important piece, is this idea that Winnipeg could have a center, a young center under team control for a lot of years, just to guide them through what hopefully from the Jets' perspective is a transition to a culture where everybody wants to play there, where at least the winning is so prominent that, you know, if you don't happen to like this city that I love personally as a Murat, that the winning makes the appeal. And maybe Kirby Dach could be part of that. I've written about Josh Anderson as a piece. If you just looked at Winnipeg right now and everybody was happy, including Dubois, and everybody was staying, what does this team need? It needs, you know, a prime Josh Anderson. I think the team needs a right wing. It needs somebody who can play with sandpaper in that top six to complement the skill. I'm not sure how I feel about $5.5 million for another five seasons necessarily, but I could see the appeal just because when he's on his game, for example, in playoff hockey, that's a player that Winnipeg doesn't necessarily have. And so those are the two that jump out to me on the initial wish list. And even with that caveat about Josh Anderson, that's a tough contract to commit to, I think, if I'm making a wish list for Pierre-Luc Dubois for a long term and Winnipeg's growth in the next several years.
Yeah, that's fair. And that's honestly, I think, if this trade happens soon, I don't think the city of Winnipeg, I should say, are going to be thrilled with it. Like, I just feel like the Canadians aren't going to make this trade until they feel they're getting a steal. I don't think the Jets are making this deal until they're getting fair return. Like, I'd still be pretty surprised if this trade actually culminated this summer. The one victim of this whole situation is your summer vacation, really, because you're basically gonna have to chase this thing because there's so many things to chase the rest of summer. But yeah, if I had to handicap it, I would imagine this trade's not happening anytime soon, because I think that, as you mentioned, Kevin Sheldahoff, as he should be, is going to be stubborn about it. He absolutely should do that. And I think Kent Hughes is going to just also is in a position to be patient. And so when you have two GMs who are in a position to be patient, I think what is the most likely outcome is a lot of patience, which means we're probably going to have to wait for this.
And it makes sense. It tracks too, because if we talk about those pinch points, you know, that team that gets desperate for a center on a solid contract because it thinks that he can push him over the edge, well, it wouldn't be too bad for them to see another 4 months or so of Dubois playing at the level that he did last season and showing what kind of player he is. And I know there's some concern that, you know, he won't have back-to-back great seasons if he's unhappy and all those sorts of things, and he still needs a contract. But if you're Winnipeg thinking, okay, when am I going to get the best deal for him? Well, I mean, another season like he just had would be a big help as well.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, Murat, thank you so much for hopping on our podcast. It was great having you. Good luck with your time off this summer, because I know we went through it, Arpin and I, a few years ago. We chased the Max Pacioretty trade story the whole summer. It really wrecked our summer that year. Yes. But that it did.
So you know, yeah, you get so, it.
Oh yeah, that's right. We get it, absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, try to take some time off. I don't think this needs to be chased 24/7, because as I just mentioned, I think something's going to have to give at some point. But, you know, I also thought the Jeff Petrie trade wasn't happening for a long time. And then it happened, you know, smack dab in the middle of a barbecue at a friend's house on a weekend. So anyhow, Murat, thank you so much. That was a great conversation. I think our listeners and hopefully the listeners in Winnipeg will tune in to get your perspective. Keep up the great work. And please do try and enjoy some time off this summer. Thanks so much.
Thank you both, guys.
So other big big news item was obviously the Jeff Petrie trade that came, as you mentioned, well, during your in the middle of your barbecue over the weekend.
Yes.
Are you surprised by the type of return the Canadians got? I mean, Kent Hughes was pretty adamant that he was hoping if it was not within this trade, he would be out looking for a veteran defenseman to replace Jeff Petrie. And basically, even though Mike Matheson is a left-handed defenseman, he's going to fill the hole that was created by Alexander Romanov's departure. But the sort of return, not going for futures or for draft picks, and in a sense, you know, once you've added Rem Pitlick to the equation, it's not a huge saving of money, maybe a 1.something million. What's your take on what the Canadians got?
Well, I think the one thing I misread about this whole situation was that I thought Ken Hughes was going for the biggest fish Ken Hughes was going out to find in the Jeff Petrie trade was cap space. I thought he was going to take back maybe $2 million. Tops $3 million in contracts. But really, this was going to be sort of a salary dump type of trade. And that's not what Ken Hughes did at all. You know, he made a hockey trade. It's yes, there's a cap savings involved, but he did throw in Ryan Poehling, which I think is a proper reflection of the value that Mike Matheson had. It is a proper reflection of Pittsburgh's unwillingness to trade Mike Matheson and how they were so encouraged by what they saw from him last season that they actually wanted to keep him and have him be part of the solution there. And you know, by all accounts, that's actually what happened. Ken Hughes said so. You know, various people in Pittsburgh have said, you know, our colleague Josh Yowie reported that they did not want to include Mike Matheson in this deal. So good on Ken Hughes for sticking to his guns on that. And so, but it was... I guess I was surprised because I did not expect a hockey trade in this transaction, and that's mm-hmm. what happened. He traded a good defenseman, who, unfortunately for Pittsburgh, fits perfectly into their demographics in terms of age. I mean, at 34, he slides right into a room that is all hovering around 34. So are really, you know, over the next two seasons, looking to get that one more cup for their core group. So great for them in that sense. Petrie's a hell of a defenseman, and I think he'll do very well there. And I think their team got a little bit better in this deal. But, you know, Ken Hughes, when you said talking about getting futures, I think Ken Hughes kind of sees Mike Matheson as a future. He's signed for 4 years. I think Matheson spoke quite eloquently about his journey and what he's learned from his time in Florida and how he wouldn't change a thing, how it's shaped who he is right now. And could potentially, as you wrote yesterday, could potentially be on the verge of thriving in much the same way Jeff Petrie did when he arrived. And so it's not out of the question that at 28 years old, Mike Matheson is going to find another gear and really have his career take off. But that's the risk Ken Hughes is taking. And I think based on last season, it's not a bad risk.
No, what I found very interesting from what Mike Matheson said is that it takes longer because of the responsibilities that rest on defensemen's shoulders and the fact that all of their mistakes are magnified compared to forwards, you know, and it's even more true for goalies because they're the last line of defense. But the more impact your mistakes on the ice have, the more the bigger the learning process at the NHL level. And for that reason, we see defensemen and goalies tend to get better and learn their craft and maybe reach their peak later than forwards. It's not a physical thing, it's a mental thing. And I think that just as we saw with Jeff Petrie when he arrived from Edmonton, I mean, he was already 27 years old when he was traded from Edmonton, and he became he found another gear with the Canadians. So I think that Matheson, that other gear, I think that you could argue that he already found it, you know, under assistant coach Todd Reardon in Pittsburgh. But the hope will be that he continues on that path and becomes essentially a player that could be just as good as Jeff Petrie down the road. So I think it's very interesting for the Canadians. Considering that Petrie still had 3 years at $6.25 million, I could not conceive that they would trade this guy and make it a salary dump, because it's just not a contract that you can move without getting anything in return. So few teams, let alone teams for whom Petrie makes sense, but just say, here's a guy, here's a contract of 6.25 for 3 years. It's just a tough pill to swallow. Money has to come out the other way. And since Kent Hughes was adamant in saying that he would find a guy that could at least, you know, who could replace Petrie or occupy a spot on his blue line, in retrospect, it made total sense for me that they went for a guy like Matheson. It's just the caliber of player that I find interesting, and the fact also that it's an offensively inclined defenseman and not just another stay at home, another David Savard type. I think that the fact that they got a guy who's a very adept skater, a guy that can carry the puck, and potentially will be able to thrive in a more dynamic style of play that Martin Saint-Louis wants to implement in Montreal, I think it bodes well. It's if people in Montreal, if the coaches, if everybody are ready to live with the occasional miscue and the brain cramp that Mike Matheson might have and that he's been known for since he got in the league, and they're willing to take the bad with the good, and as long as the good outweighs the bad, such as it's been the case when he was in Pittsburgh, it's going to be a good deal for the Montreal Canadiens, because they were in a situation where there were just not many suitors for Petrie. It was a tough contract, no matter how good the player is. It was a tough contract to move, and they got a good player out of it. So I think it's a good piece of business from Kent Hughes.
Yeah, I think the market realities definitely played a part here. So now you look at their defense as it stands right at this moment, because this can change. But you have Michael Matheson, Joel Edmondson, David Savard, Justin Barron, who I think Ken Hughes mentioned as a possibility on the right side, which I found very interesting that I'm about to talk about right now. But you also have Jordan Harris, you have Chris Weidman, and you have the potential of a Caden Gooley, you know, making the jump. Arbor Jacki, it's been mentioned. Corey Schuneman was mentioned by Ken Hughes. Madison Bowie was signed as a UFA, in all likelihood bound for Laval. All of these guys I mentioned, most of these guys rather, Bowie, Schuneman, Jacki, Gooley, Harris even, maybe even Barron, will probably all see time in Laval at some point. But if Ken Hughes is not able to acquire another defenseman, I think the possibility of either Matheson playing on the right side, which, to be frank, you know, he mentioned how he played it a little bit. And whenever I hear a player say I've played it a little bit, means it's not really it's not really an ideal option. So, yeah. You know, if you keep Mike Matheson on the left side, you know, to me, Justin Barron becomes a very interesting player, because in Joel Edmondson,
he's a right-handed defenseman, so he plays on the right already.
I know. Well, that's what I'm saying. So that, yeah. But if Mike Matheson's not on the right, mm-hmm. Ken Hughes might be forced into doing something he said he wouldn't do, which is to force a young player into a role that he might not necessarily be ready for. Now, you can make the argument that Justin Barron's ready for it. He spent some time in the AHL. It's not as if he's, you know, he's only 20 right now, but I mean, he's young. But maybe he's prepared for this, you know. Maybe he's ready for a top four role. But to me, when I look at the defense, if you go Matheson, Savard, and Barron Edmondson, you have a pretty good mix of a defensive conscience with a more offensive guy, another defensive conscience, if you will, with a more offensive guy, and it makes for an interesting top four in theory. Now, is Barron ready for that? I'm not sure, but their options on the right. The other option is Chris Weidman. And so it's interesting to me that Ken Hughes would mention Justin Barron as one of the potential solutions for the right side of his defense if he's unable to go and find one. And we all know, you know, it's not as if effective top four right defensemen are just sitting around waiting for a contract. Usually they're difficult to find.
Yeah. And I mean, the Canadiens blue line, even with Petrie in it, didn't look particularly strong, and they haven't gotten better by replacing Petrie with Matheson, at least a Petrie playing at its full potential. So it doesn't look good right now. I doubt though are they going to be able to go and get a player who's going to make who would be a top pairing defenseman on the right side before the beginning of the season? I really doubt it. But the fact is that you look at those defensemen, they're all quite good, but none of them is a top pairing defenseman. So you're going to challenge everybody to play like a notch above the role that they should be playing. So, and I'm looking right at you, David Savard, because he's going to be most likely given a ton of minutes, and on a good team, he'd be a third pairing guy, but he's going, as it stands now, he might be a 22 minute guy in next season. Could end up in a chair that ideally would not belong to them.
Yeah. Well, I think their defense, they're not going to have a top pair. They're going to have a defense by committee. They're going to have three pairings that play between 17 and 19 minutes or whatever, however it works out, or three pairings that play 20 minutes, I guess, would be the math on that. But, you know, I could see them going, you know, with the top four that, because you can't, if you're going to put Justin Barron in a situation where he's playing heavy minutes with Joel Edmondson, you know, you can't add to that by going like a top four heavy ice time allotment or usage. You're going to have to balance things out. So
when
you said David Savard would be a third pairing defenseman on a good team, well, that's kind of the beauty for the Canadiens. They're not a good team. So they've made some moves. They've added some talent, Matheson, you know, Doc, Slafkovsky, obviously. You could even throw Dadonov in there. Like they've made some moves to make them better in some sense. But they're still not good enough to be in the playoffs or even close to the playoffs, in my opinion, especially with how much the Atlantic division has gotten stronger. So the Canadiens have improved, yet they might not improve that much in the standings and still be a bottom 10 team. And as we discussed with Murat, could wind up with a top 10, maybe even a top 5 pick next year. I think it's kind of a best of both worlds scenario for the Canadiens right now.
Yeah. As for Ryan Poehling, it's not a surprise that he was a throw-in in that deal. I mean, he was waiver eligible. I mean, if he was not to earn a spot on the Montreal Canadiens at the end of this coming camp, he would have been put on waivers and most likely would have been claimed. I think that instead of losing him for nothing, I mean, I think he was an interesting commodity for a team and an interesting low-cost gamble. So I think it made plenty of sense. I'm zero surprised that he was moved as a part of that deal. As for Rem Pitlick, well, he comes back because Martin Saint-Louis liked him. He liked Montreal, but it's just that he was not qualified in the first place because the amount that he could have gotten in arbitration was just way beyond what the Canadiens were ready to give him and way they just could not afford him at twice the amount that he ended up signing for. So it's at 1.1 for 2 years. It's interesting because he's a guy who's still going to be there next year when the likes of Dadonov, Byron, and Drouin will have their contract finished and there will be more openings on the wing by then.
Yes, absolutely. I will just add it just in closing that Ryan Poehling is the only player, I think literally the only player that Martin Saint-Louis did not go out of his way to praise. He's the only one, you know, Martin Saint-Louis would be asked about Mike Hoffman, Christian Dvorak, Yoel Larmia, obviously Rem Pitlick many times, even Pezzetta, like any player he was asked about, he would find their redeeming quality and share it with us. The only one he didn't was Ryan Poehling. Would always say, yeah. I don't know what he's going to be. I don't know how much offense he has. I don't know. I don't know. After a while, you're like, you really don't know. You don't know enough that maybe this guy's going to be on his way out. So there he is. He's gone. Okay. Well, that I think wraps up this episode. Let's see if the Canadians force us back in terms of getting another news-based episode of the Athletic Support out. But for now, enjoy your summertime. Keep an eye out. We have a pretty interesting story coming out on The Athletic pretty soon. So keep an eye out for that. But we'll keep working on that. But you guys enjoy your summer, and we will talk to you next time.
Have a good day, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you.